Hello, and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 40 years ago this month, December 1979, Jimmy Carter was our president, William Milliken, Michigan's governor, and Coleman Young, Detroit's mayor. And that is when I landed my first job in radio at Detroit religious station WMUZ, 1 a.m. to 8 a.m., six mornings a week. As excited as I was at the prospect of launching a radio career, I was equally terrified because I was learning on the job in the middle of the night. As I drove to the station, nervous, afraid, I would pop in my cassette tape of The Who for just one song. There was just something about Pete Townshend's lyrics and Roger Daltrey's swaggering vocals that kept me from turning around, going home, and calling this whole broadcast thing off. And it worked. I didn't chicken out and go home. And 40 years later, as I step into retirement, I can say it has been rich, it's been challenging, it's been an exciting career in radio and TV. And there have been enormous changes in radio in these decades. So let's talk radio then and now. With us, writer Jim McFarlane, who spent many years with the Detroit News, including as media critic, and Steve Schramm, executive director and general manager of Michigan Public Media. He's our head guy here at Michigan Radio, but he began his long radio career as a DJ in the Detroit area, and he's our wizard about all things radio. Steve, give me a few words to describe radio, especially commercial radio, 40 years ago versus today.
Well, I think it's quite different, Cindy. I think that back in that time, if you start in 79, which is the year we're referencing, even all the way through the 80s, the Detroit area was in quite an exciting, dynamic, competitive arena. There weren't as many, while there were corporate ownerships of radio stations, they weren't as clamped down as they are today. There was certainly more live radio in terms of people on the air through at least till midnight, and many stations midnight to 6 a.m. as well. Today, that has changed dramatically, as has the ownership dimensions of how many stations are owned by one group and how they are commonly dictated in terms of their program format, the music that they play, announcers that are piped in from other stations across the country. So yes, what I think all that has done for public radio is giving us great opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that is what has distinguished the ability for Michigan radio and other public radio stations across the state to see growth that has come as the dimensions of commercial radio have become less competitive.
Jim McFarlane, I get the feeling as I read comments on the Facebook page with all the listeners who were there for St. James and Harper at WNIC in the 80s, and then the Magic Morning Show when we launched that in 2001, and the Breakfast Club. I get a lot of people going, there's nothing like you guys anymore. How has it changed for the consumer, for the listener?
Well, I think that's very true, Cindy. I think that to jump off of what Steve said, I started in 79 when I came to Detroit, and I was railing with the FCC. You can't have this situation where a small group of owners own a lot of stations in the same market because there's no way to compete. There's no reason to compete. And what you got is a lot of that personality radio just became down to one show for like six different stations, and you lose all that competitive effect. It used to be so good. I was in Detroit radio at the best possible time, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s when, you know, you had JP and you had all these great talents. You had Harper and Harper and St. James and Harper and Gannon and Harper and you and Harper and whoever was on the mic at the time. And and that's gone. You know, I mean, there's still personality. It's just not the same because there's really no competition left anymore.
I stop and I kind of think of that era you're referring to in force. Actually, throughout the state of Michigan, people would know J.P. McCarthy on WGR. I used to fill in on that station. I would get phone calls from Kentucky. I mean, that station had some reach. But my goodness, you had John Mason on WJLB, Dick Purton and Purton's people, Jim Harper, and all these permutations of the show as he had different partners. What do you think made a radio morning show something that listeners just jumped in to tune in the morning for?
I think more than anything else, they're looking for someone they can relate to. What makes radio such a great medium, I've always said, is you can take it in the bathroom with you. You know, you can take it in the car with you. It's part of you. And if you got a voice or a person or a show or a group of people on the air that you really relate to, that make you feel like you're part of their group. You know, we all want inclusion. We want to feel like we're part of a larger body. And you've got so many morning teams that do just, you know, you need to wake up in the morning. You need a good laugh. You need to feel like you're going to face the day not alone. You look for a bunch of people or a person that you can really relate to. And we had some such great talents. I mean, I feel blessed to have known and spent time with Joe McCarthy. I think he was my gold standard. When I would do radio, I'd think about, what would JP do? Because he always sounded like he read the book. He always sounded like he knew the guest. He always sounded prepared. And a lot of shows today just don't have that kind of, whether they do it or not, they don't give you the impression that they do.
All those names that Cindy was mentioning earlier, whether it be Jim Harper and Dick Pertin, certainly, and even mm-hmm. John Mason, I had the good fortune of managing all those individuals at various spaces in my commercial career.
Oh my goodness.
And one of the things that I walked away from was the work ethic that those personalities put into their program. They just did not sashay in at 5 to 6 a.m. They had a team working around them that the day before trying to set up that show. They had ensembles like the Breakfast Club that Cindy was in a critical part of that really helped raise the host. And Pertin did the same thing with Pertin's people as well.
Yeah, no question.
So when you see that kind of effort, that kind of investment, and that level of talent that's put into programming, that's what resonated with listeners, and that's why it lifted the stations that they were on for the whole day.
Interesting things that developed toward the end of my time in commercial radio. When I think that when I began in 1979, it was to do 10 minutes of news overnight at 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m., because it was a religious radio station that wanted the daytime free for the money-making stuff. But that was when you were required to do a certain level of news and a certain amount of public affairs. That went away because my last year, I didn't do any news. I just did a little traffic and a little weather.
That was certainly atypical back then. Mm-hmm. And it's you're right. The FCC has kind of loosened all of that restriction and redefined it. And I think because a number of things have occurred. We talked about the ownership consolidation and perhaps how some of the influence of those companies made changes on the rules. I think you saw the birth of satellite radio. And what that did is adding an additional factor of where people could find listenership. And now you have online stations all over the globe. And the amount of variety of sources that are out there for content are incredible. So I think that things have changed so dramatically from what we're referencing back in the late 70s and early 80s, and has made it a lot more interesting. I think at the end of the day, what we are trying to do right now in public radio, you've been with us now, Cindy, 7 years, and thank you for tremendous contribution in leading stateside. I think public radio has had the chance to take that mantle and take it seriously in terms of news and information coverage, and really providing a better information service for the citizens of the state of Michigan.
Right. Especially now, and especially in these times, and maybe for all times to come, you need to have a source you can go to. And I think that public radio has created such a bond of trust with its listeners that they know they can go there and find something that's straight news, unbiased. And that's important these days in this era. Everybody's calling everybody's fake news. It's great to have a source you can go to and really feel comfortable knowing that you're getting the straight dope, so to speak.
You know, it's been 113 years since the first radio broadcast for entertainment and music was transmitted from Brant Rock, Massachusetts to the general public. Certainly some things have changed in the 40 years since I first went behind the mic. What do you both think radio of the future is going to mean to listeners?
I think it's going to continue to be more personal in so many different ways as it can be, certainly with online experiences. But I do think at the end of the day, which is what I think has stood the test of time, is how well the content is curated, how well it is presented, how well it informs, how well it entertains. It doesn't really matter what the distribution channel is or the distribution method. It matters about the humanity of what is in the message. It matters about the personality and how they resonate with the person on the other end. It still in many ways is a one-to-one medium, even though it's been one-to-many in terms of the broadcast impact. When it really relates to the person who's on the other end of receiving that, they feel it's one-to-one, and that's when you've become successful.
What do you see in your crystal ball, Jim McFarlane?
Radio at its best is you talking to me. There's no one else in the world except the guy on the radio or the woman on the radio and me. And it's that one-to-one connection. And if it's an ensemble cast, you're all performing for me. I am the king of my car, and you are playing your play for me. And that may never go away. People keep talking about the death of radio. Radio's not going anywhere, but it will continue to change and evolve, and it will conform to the needs of its listeners. And I think that there's so much competition. As Steve said, you got online, you got satellite, but If you want to know what's going on down the street, or you want to know if your high school team won tonight, you're not going to a satellite. You're going to your local radio station to find that out. And there'll always be that need to have a source that can talk to you, A, and give you local information, B.
Well, I have to say, in my 40 years, you've both played a very, very big role. From the bottom of my heart, Steve Schramm, thank you for inviting me here to Michigan Radio. As our mutual friend Dick Kernan of Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts said to me, you know you've died and gone to broadcast heaven, don't you? And the answer is, yes, I have. And Jim McFarland, I owe you a special thanks because in 1984, you bestowed your coveted Big Mac Awards on a whole bunch of us at WNIC. And boy, did you make our bosses happy with us. So,
well, you deserved it, first of all. I just want to say before you got here, you are, Cindy Canty, going to be dearly missed in this market. There is no one I know who is as universally liked, respected, and admired as Cynthia Canty. And if you don't know Cindy Canty personally, if you're one of the 7,000 people who've been interviewed by her, but you don't know her, that is your loss, because she is one outstanding human being and a credit to profession.
And I want to add one thing to that, Jim. Probably one of the most prideful things that I've ever done being here at Michigan Radio almost in 14 years is hiring Cindy. In 2012, we have certainly worked together during our time at WNIC when NIC was number one in the market. And
that's
for
right.
The opportunity to bring her here and to introduce her to a public radio marketplace and audience that has just loved her and embraced her for these past 7 years. What a point of pride that is for me and for our station.
Steve Schramm, Jim McFarland, hugs to both of you. Thank you for being on my final show.
Take care and best wishes, Cindy.
Thank you, Cindy. Enjoy your time in Cork.